Get your gear ready. This is a Sherpa's Guide to Innovation.
Welcome back to the Bobcast. A Sherpa's Guide to Innovation podcast. When we last left our heroes, Bob was discussing his new book entitled Choosing College, How to Make Better Learning Decisions Throughout Your Life. I, Ben Tingey, Sherpa podcast host, was interviewed by Bob about my graduate school choices. This episode, part two of the series, will complement the conversation we had in part one. So if you haven't listened to that episode, we recommend you pause and listen to it first before continuing with this episode. My colleague Jay Gerhardt is with me in the studio, and we have Bob on the line calling in from Detroit. Welcome back, Jay and Bob.
Thanks, hey, Ben. Thanks, Ben. A little break gave you some time to wipe the perspiration off your brow after being grilled.
It was lots of fun. And we were just talking earlier about how being interviewed, I think, is a great way to learn how to be a better interviewer. And as someone who does them, for me, it's always a great learning experience to be on the opposite side, because you can really see the angles and why it's important to ask particular questions.
And you realize how hard you're thinking to answer the questions. And so when you go through this, you start to realize, like, okay, you got to give them some space to think through it. And, you know, you want to make sure that you don't necessarily catch them in something that they might have made up or that they're, you know, kind of like weren't clear on. And so part of this is you have to realize, like, how to give them enough space to think, but also to realize, like, you got to ask all the questions, because leaving a question on the floor or leaving the question in your head is not a good thing.
Yeah, you just got to ask.
Just got to ask.
Yep. Well, Bob, let's start talking a little bit more about your book. Tell us a couple of the more memorable stories, maybe just a couple from the interviews that you did, and then how you were able to sift through the interviews and find the similarities and patterns and then connect them together to figure out the different job groups.
So for the last 30 years, I've spent basically helping companies build better products for consumers. And so I'm an engineer, and I've I like to build stuff, right? And this is my first kind of switch from going from helping companies to helping consumers. And I think the reality is that there's other places where people can use help, but college is one of those where you just see the problem kind of mounting of an 18-year-old kid or even going to graduate school. You start to realize that these are big decisions, and that we're really not prepared to make these decisions. And part of this is being able to help them understand the context that they're in and the outcome that they seek. So you can actually kind of help them see their value code for what they want to do with it. Because at some point, too many people were going to college and they're, you know, when you drop out of college and you have student debt, the likelihood you can pay that off is literally almost 20. I mean, it's just a monumental, almost a lifetime that you're going to take to pay it off, because you don't get the benefit of having the higher salary or the better job to pay it off. And so all of a sudden you have to realize dropping out is a really big deal. And so part of this is really kind of helping consumers be better consumers. And so Michael Horn and I went off and we interviewed, I think in the end it was like we did qualitative interviews, right? And we started with 108 students, but we got 209 stories. So we actually talked to people who went back several times. So like when you got your undergrad, what you got your grad, when you went and you dropped out and you went back again. So in all different kind of walks of life. It also included things like, you know, boot camps, executive ed, and just going to take an online class. And so it was, again, what causes people to say, today's the day I got to turn to education and I'm going to hire a school, whether it's a college, a university, a community college, a for-profit school, like what causes you to say, I'm going to go get education. So from that, we were able to kind of identify what I would call the pushes, the pulls, the anxieties and their habits, or kind of like all the dominoes that are at play. And so in the end, we ended up getting, about 38 different kinds of variables. Everything from, you know, to Ben's case is like when I got married, or now that I have more responsibility. So what you started to realize is like that's a common theme in a couple of these interviews or a couple of these jobs, where you start to realize like when all of a sudden they find themselves having or preparing themselves to step up for responsibility. versus, boy, I really don't like what I'm doing now or where I'm at. You know, I really want to get out of here, and going back to school is a way for me to help escape. And so you start to realize that there's these different variables about when there's certain situation they're in and the outcome or the context that they're, or the outcome that they're actually seeking. And so I call it the context is when I am, and the outcomes are so I can. And then the other thing you have in there are some anxieties that kind of go with it. And so from that, we actually can use some math to help us kind of see the patterns between it. And after doing it, quite a lot of stories, 208, and then we end up kind of doing some quantitative analysis as well with a couple thousand sample size, we start to realize like there's only really five very different jobs or five really different kind of stories of how people start to engage with higher ed. And so that's kind of what the book kind of outlines is what are those five different jobs and how do you identify yourself in them so you can understand the power of them, but also the limitations of them.
And when you talk about those variables that you code, I think some of those are the pushes and the pulls, right? So you're actually mathematically tallying how many of these stories involved I'm getting married, or how many of these stories involved I need to make more money or something like that.
So part of this is the method itself is about finding what I call the right level of abstraction. And so whether it was getting married or you're having a child, or all of a sudden you have to take care of somebody, you know, whether it's a grandparent, but there's this notion of I have increased responsibility. And so when I feel like I need to be more responsible it's either part of somebody's story or not. And so we start to realize how do we actually understand how these things kind of go together. The interesting part is there, if you've talked to Todd Rose or you know anything about End of Average, these jobs are very jagged. They're not like it's only this is where they have more responsibility, this is where they don't. It's a combination of these things together. And so it's a pretty sophisticated algorithm, but it's actually pretty cool to kind of see like there's really like five doors that they can open. And so, and when you understand that you're in this one door or this other door, there's very different criteria by which you should be choosing, what you should be thinking about, what are the advice I'd give or the advice we'd give, and at the same time, the watch outs.
That visual you have it on the cover of the five doors, I think is perfect. And I think this book is a testament to your incredible skill of being able to identify patterns. We won't walk through all five of the jobs, but when folks read the book and they see those five jobs, I believe that they will resonate very strongly. And many people will have experienced several of those jobs in their life. And my wife and I went out to dinner Saturday, and we kind of walked through our experiences. Now, she has a much better memory than me, so we nailed hers probably better. But they resonate. They're very clear. You know, they seem like it's common sense, but it's not common practice because you did a ton of research to get to it. So
I think the other thing, though, is that they all actually have – they're coming from very different places. Yep. And so it's very similar to hospital where you have one orientation, you have one way of doing something. The reality is like these are five very different things. Some people know exactly what they want to do, and some people have actually no idea what they want to do.
Yeah.
And so the reality is, but they walk in the same door in the same university and they have to take all the same classes. And the reality is like, okay, how do we not have the, I mean, school is way too expensive. It's between $100,000 and $300,000 to basically go to school and get this higher education. And the reality is like we're taking a lot of things that either we don't need, or the fact is that we do need, but we need to call out and be explicit about, because I don't believe that students are actually connecting the dots of why we're having them take humanities when they're in engineering school. And they need to know it because they got to learn how to communicate, but nobody's actually helping them connect those dots.
Yeah. So on the flip side, how can higher education institutions and organizations provide better experiences that, you know, really nail these jobs to be done?
Yeah. So I think the best example in this one is the one that's called Step It Up, right? These are people who are in a situation where they're, you know, they find themselves in a case where they've either been not working or been basically, you know, coming out of undergrad, like Ben's case, or it's one of these cases where I've been working a blue collar job, or I'm not making enough to do what I need to do to provide for the family. And they've tried school a little bit here and there, but the reality is like, I need to make myself employable. And when they go off and do this, this is where they get very specific, and their time horizon is past school. So they're looking past school to the job. So that's one of the reasons why, Ben, you were in the Step It Up job, is because most people actually only see themselves getting to school or being in school, but not past school, which is very interesting. And so in this job, the Southern New Hampshire has actually just dominated this job, where they've actually changed their entire a lot of their organization around the online side to help people basically figure out like a completely different experience of going to school. These are typically people who are older. They're not in the 18 to 24 demographic. They typically have a job, or they're working already. They have kids. They're married or in some kind of relationship. And what you find is the fact is that they have this notion of now or never. And so what Paul LeBlanc at SNHU has done has literally changed the organization, or carved out a part of the organization to service this part of the market. And he's gone from, 500 online students in 2010 when he started to hear about this stuff. This is kind of where one of the places we started to. I think last year he has 130,000 students. He graduated 39,000 students. Wow. In May.
Wow.
Right. And so the question I always kind of ask is, how many people want to go back to school but can't? And that's what Paul's notion of that's who I want to be able to help. And so most people say is, demand for school is there. And the fact is, but they take it as applications. And the way the application market is, everybody applies to four or five schools. And so we actually over amplify the true demand. And at the same time, the fact is how many people don't even bother to apply because they don't think they can get in. Yeah. And so to me, going after non-consumption in this place, in this segment, was just phenomenal. And he's gone from $100 million to almost $1 billion organization, not-for-profit school, where he now has basically, financial aid for some over 95% of the students.
Yeah. And there's just a lot of room for innovation, as you've pointed out in the book in this segment, because it doesn't even have to be limited to school. It can be a boot camp. It can be some type
learning
of focused certification.
Yeah, yeah. We got some people who took a boot camp at the Starter League, and right, it's like, it's like $16,000. It's 20 weeks. They learn how to program, and they go find them a job at the end. And so it's this notion of like, I can go, it's time for me to step it up and learn from, and they would get six-figure jobs coming right out of Starter League. And so part of this was this whole notion of that there's lots of innovation on the edge around the step it up, because too many schools are kind of caught in that parochial, way in which to learn, which is again, appropriate for some, but not necessarily appropriate for everyone.
Yeah. So, Bob, tell us about some of the ways that you hope this book will better enable consumers of education throughout their lives.
Yeah. So we wrote this book in kind of three different ways. We had three kind of different jobs. One was to help students actually be better consumers. So most people are looking at the U.S. News and World Report top 100 schools. How ranked is this school? People aren't necessarily, they don't have a way to guide themselves to figure out how to pick. And so there's lots of books around this notion of the process into college, but this is really a book to take before you actually start that process. Say, why do I want to go back to college? This is actually about the helping you identify what's motivating you to say, I should go to college. And part of the motivation is I don't know what to do. I don't know what else is next. I don't know what I like. There's a whole bunch of things. Most people think that they have to have the answer, but one is to make it explicit on their side of what is it that they're seeking. And two is to help the universities innovate themselves so they don't actually offer one size fits all like many industries have. Yeah. So my goal was to help students first, or Michael and I's goal. The second was to really help parents have conversations, because we could see the mismatch between the job that the student was in and the job the parent thinks the student is in, and how there's conflict in the family. And so this notion of helping facilitate conversations with the family and being able to give them a common language and give them some stories to talk about. Are you more like this person or more like that person? So it allows you to have a better conversation. So again, people can choose a little better. And then the third was really kind of at the back end, and it's not written primarily for them, but it's more just trying to make sure that they understand is that if this is how the market is moving and this is how people make these choices to move forward, you need to adjust your services as a higher ed education service provider to actually provide these opportunities.
I love in the book, it's a very practical book. It's very consumable. And I like how you have sample dialogues at the end of each chapter. It shows for each job, you actually show a little, you know, graphic novelette, I'm saying that instead of cartoon, where here's the conversation you shouldn't have, and then here's the conversation you could have. And I think it's really very practical.
Well, and I think this gets back to listening to what they say and what they mean. And I don't think as parents, me being a parent of four, like at some point in time, you get used to people's patterns. And so part of this is I would say that I didn't listen to my children when they went to school. To be honest, three of my four did not make it, you know, in September of their freshman year to go to college. And so it was one of those things where it was like there was a whole bunch of dynamics in the family and everything. And I would say half of it was the battle of me and my wife having different expectations than my our kids, and being able to actually wrestle with. And to be honest, they all found their way. And part of it is I can see exactly where the job is that they had and the job that we thought they had, and how we were actually kind of in conflict. And so part of this is the book I wish I had when my kids went to college.
And before we move on to talking about healthcare, you've also mentioned there's not just going to be a book to help people, there'll be an app as well.
Yeah, so I just finished up, to be honest, this weekend I've been stitching it together and kind of doing some beta testing on it. But it's an app that basically allows you, when you buy the book, you can go to choosing.college, and at the site, it'll say take the assessment, and it'll go through and ask you a series of, it's like 15 questions kind of repeated, and it allows you to actually look at the variables of pushes, pulls, and anxieties that then will give you kind of like, here's what job based on how you answered it, here's what job you're in. So the interesting part to me is there's some jobs where people won't admit that they're in one job. So like, help me escape. People will confuse that and say like, oh yeah, I'm trying to find my best school. But when they talk about I'm not challenged at work, and boy, you know, at some point I don't want to work in this industry anymore. I don't want to be in this space anymore. It's like, I'm going back to school to help me escape. Nobody really wants to admit that that's what they want. But when they're in that job, there's very specific things you should be doing that are different than if you're trying to get into for example, your best school. And so part of this is that, and almost at the individual level, we can identify it, but at the aggregate level, they actually mismatch it, to be honest. Hmm. And the app will help us do that.
That's great.
That's so interesting. Well, let's move into our discussion about how this can relate to healthcare. I've already heard a lot of similarities, and Jay speed read through the book this past weekend, and his mind was firing about a lot of the healthcare connections. Actually, Jay, do you want to start us out, and then Bob, you jump in, and we'll figure out what connections we can find to healthcare?
Yeah, I'll bet we have some common ones, but I'll just start with kind of the obvious one is, again, it's very difficult to know how to choose in education. There's all these different choices. There's all these rankings and U.S. News and World Report, and all different quality. Healthcare is very similar. There's all sorts of different rankings, but it's hard to even know where to go. And I know, Bob, you've hit this in almost every conversation we've ever had, is it's so hard to choose in healthcare. So maybe let's start. Talk to me a little bit about choosing in healthcare, and then maybe let's talk about some of the other similarities you see.
Yeah, I think the notion is that when you start to look at what choice people really have and what choices can they really make, think of it this way. It's like, you know, as a student, I can choose the school, but I can't choose my professors, or it's very hard for me to choose my professors. I actually can't choose my doctor. In most cases, like if I have a doctor and I don't really want to work with that doctor anymore, how do I actually go find another doctor? There's no way to shop. There's no way to actually understand. In most cases, where because healthcare has been seen as so expensive, we literally, as in education, we don't question what it's doing. We just question whether we should be engaged with it or not. And so part of this is to realize, like, we have to change the way. This is what I call the two-sided problem, is that One is consumers actually don't know how to choose. And two, the healthcare providers aren't organized in a way that I can actually consume. And so it's this bimodal thing where it's very, very similar in both cases where, again, my doctor, if they're, you know, they tell me you can't eat this and exercise every day and do all these things. And the reality is like, that's not my life. And so what happens is they just end up lecturing me and I don't end up changing my behavior. But yet when I find a nutritionist or I get a coach or a trainer, like all of a sudden they can help me with these things that again, my doctor would never help me with. And so part of this is to realize like, I need to figure out how to integrate these things as opposed to working out is very different than healthcare.
We keep talking about healthcare consumerism, and we've had another recent podcast conversation on this with someone inside healthcare, where we keep saying consumerism's great. Once consumers can choose, you know, a lot of these problems are going to melt away in healthcare. But the fact is, people can't choose. They don't have the right information, and it's a great burden to place on a healthcare consumer.
Yeah, Bob, you said that people aren't prepared to make decisions about education. I mean, I think about what immediately came to mind was some of the most expensive parts of a person's life are in the last 2 weeks of their life. And a lot of it is, you know, we're just not prepared to make healthcare decisions, you know, advanced care directives and end of life types of situations. Like people just don't have the education for it, but it's also, there's such a huge emotional hurdle that like, it's impossible to choose unless you like absolutely have to. It's like, yeah.
But here's the thing is it's not impossible to choose. Part of it is being able to frame it up and be able to talk about it. The one thing that we can all, you know, my dad used to say, the one thing you can always count on is death and taxes. Like we're all going to die. And so the fact is like at some point in time, it doesn't have to be a bad thing, but when you're not prepared for it or you're not prepared to go to school, it's impossible to choose which school. It's impossible to choose what's going to happen. And so part of this is one of the best ways in which to kind of prepare people is to at least help them understand the context and the outcome they're going to be in and where they're going to go and what's going to happen. So to me, there's so much like in healthcare, people are being directed and they're actually not engaged in what their healthcare outcome is until it's all of a sudden they feel like they're looking death in the eyes. And now all of a sudden they want to actually be very engaged. And part of this is being able to understand how they got there. What's really the options that they have? What's really going on? And so just because you want to get another doctor's opinion doesn't actually mean it's going to change the diagnosis. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a double-edged, you know, there's two faults here. One is the consumer not being smart enough to know how to consume. And the second is a system that's literally trying to standardize and build efficiencies in the wrong ways.
Yeah. And when you talk about standardization, that makes me think about designing for the average. And you've talked about that in choosing college. Help relate that to us, to healthcare.
So for example, I worked with an organization where we ended up understanding basically the different jobs that a patient has when they come to see their primary care physician on their annual visit. Right. And there are different types of visits that they have, but they literally have standardized. Everybody gets 22 minutes or something like that with the doctor. Right. And it's like, and everything's set up and nobody actually tells you that you have 22 minutes, but they actually, you know, you're literally have all this prep time. So when you see, think you're with the doctor, it's only so long. But the reality is if you're going for your annual visit, like some people are list makers and they have like a little, they have a mole here and they have a rash down there and they have this little kind of growth over there. And like, they just make a list to say like, it's not worth going to the doctor, but when I go to my annual visit, I'm going to literally walk through these things that I want to, like we want to talk about, but nobody sets that up and nobody actually calls the patient beforehand. So what we had them do is literally get on the phone and have a 10 minute call. Or a 2 minute call, to be honest, asking 5 questions that we could figure out what kind of basically annual visit this was going to be. Was this one where they actually needed to do 2 because they had a long list and here's what we were going to address? Is this about basically that they have a very complicated situation and they've been directing them and so it's more about reviewing status? Or is it literally like I just need my prescriptions renewed and literally everything seems fine and I'm in and out? And just by actually changing around the way that they actually parse that time, In 1 week, they're able to create like 17 more slots for doctors to see patients. Because at some point, some people needed 5 minutes and some people needed 30 minutes, but it wasn't as much as you thought. And so all of a sudden, they could actually see more people on the day of, as long as they had set really good expectations coming in. And so standardization causes us to literally say, everybody should be treated the same. We only get scale if everybody only uses 22 minutes. If it goes, and doctors know that, that just doesn't happen that way. And so instead of trying to actually force it to be 22 minutes, how do we actually force it to be actually adaptive to how what people's needs are?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what we're facing with a lot of disruptors in healthcare now, or a lot of venture capital backed firms that are focusing more narrowly on a particular job. So you've got those who can really serve the needs of the complicated patient that'll take a lot of time, versus those that may just need a chat bot practically to figure out what's wrong. So we're kind of getting it from the edges, but the traditional incumbent, again, has designed for the average. I think we're starting to learn that, but it takes time to integrate the processes.
So I have to tell you, even though I have insurance and I'm covered here in Michigan, I use something called K-Health. It's an app.
Yep.
It literally helps me understand exactly what's going on. And it literally walks me through a series of questions to help me decide what to do. It's yep. like, and it, you know, at some point it's an app. And it's literally as simple as just helping me understand, like, okay, you know, like, do I have allergies or do I have an infection? And it's like, well, if you haven't had it this long and not this, you might want to try allergy medicine. Like, it's at least giving me things to try, as opposed to me having to wait and go to the doctor or wait for it to get worse, or, you know, God forbid, it's like it's something very serious. And so it's at least is some kind of educational tool that allows me to have choices and then can actually help me.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the other things in the book that stuck out to me was talking about how many colleges are organized. It's around departments. You know, you have science departments and history departments. And I read that immediately. I started thinking about, in particular, the academic medical center. You have family medicine and internal medicine and neurology and neurosurgery. And we each kind of organize around these things that don't necessarily resonate to the customer.
Right. So to me, and I've talked about this before, but this is a big difference between demand side and supply side. Yep. Supply side is like, I'm going to organize the most efficient way for us to be organized, which is in verticals of knowledge and with very little horizontal connection between them. And that people can actually flow between the verticals. But the reality is that no one has a responsibility to get me from point A to point B. They just make sure I have the best neurology ever, or I have the best, you know, a cardiac. But the reality is like the those two parts of the body don't interact at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. As opposed to how do we actually figure out how to. So to me, my father-in-law, he's diabetic, amputee, renal failure. He's on dialysis, like, and he has congestive heart failure, right? He's 84. And the craziest part to me is the happiest time of his day is when he, to be honest, or of his week is when he's going to the emergency room. And I asked him, I said, why? He said, well, like, look, you have all this anxiety. As soon as we get in the car and say we're going to the emergency room, you're like, you calm down. He goes, it's the only way I can get all my doctors in the same room to talk to me about this.
Oh my God.
Otherwise, one tells me one thing, one tells me another. Like the cardiologist tells him to keep his blood pressure low. The dialysis person tells him to keep it high because he can't actually do dialysis without high blood pressure. And so he's constantly being jacked around by all these different doctors who none of them talk to each other because none of them want the stat of how my father-in-law is going to pass.
Wow.
Right. And so to me, it's this notion of the departments is like they're not treating him as a human. They're treating him as a statistic. And that's where I think the problem lies when you just focus on the supply side.
Yep. Yep. I think you can easily just translate that back to how a traditional college behaves.
So I went to a college, my first educational conference, and they're like, you know, 53% of people are leaving college with no debt. I'm like, that means 47% of college people are leaving college with no debt. And that's of graduation. I want to know of people who, like, you know, me raising my hand in the back, asking a question like, how many people have dropped out and have debt and will never be able to pay that debt back? Like,
yeah.
Where is the responsibility of, like, literally, like, having them buy college when they were either ready or that they were actually not ready to consume. And so this whole aspect, I feel like this is, you know, the college system is almost as bad as the mortgage crisis, where we're giving people debt and I'm not sure that they're ready to consume or to use it. Like, imagine being a teacher and paying $120,000 from a Michigan state school to get a teaching degree. And literally you can't pay that back for more or less 25 years.
Yeah, that's it's an incredible human cost and toll on our society, but
it's a millstone around my neck.
Yeah,
but that's I think another similarity to healthcare is that in a lot of ways the prices aren't real. That in the market, I mean, even the market knows that it's not exactly real. That what it actually takes to provide the care or to provide the education is not exactly what you pay for it, but also that people rarely pay sticker price. I mean, a lot of people go to college or they're able to figure out some type of financial aid or scholarships, other things. And oftentimes in healthcare, you know, you have insurance or other types of things that make it so that you're not exactly paying, you know, sticker price, but that also adds more to the confusion because, what is the price? So how do I make it a good decision if I don't really know what the price is end?
Very similar. It's in both industries. There's many prices.
That's right. And what they call it is a discount rate. And so it depends, like, how many people pay full boat versus how many people get some kind of financial aid, which is really, we just drop the price. And so there's all these different things about it. And so when there's no transparency about what it costs and what it is, everybody's trying to hide all the money from everybody else. And to be honest, it's just not enough to go around. I have to tell you, I was like, at one point in time, I take some medicine and I went and got a prescription. And my prescription, like, every month is about $350 when I get it with insurance. And so if at some point in time, I literally go like, hey, I have this prescription, but you know what? How much is it without the insurance? It turned out to be like $127.
Wow.
I'm like, wait, what? And like, yeah, if you
give me that
cash, right? And it's like, okay, like, I'm like, how does that explain anything? Because like, I'm paying for all this, and it's like, it's just another way they supplement everything. And so it's all this interconnectedness. And my aspect is like, at some point with me paying cash, it's like, I'm not helping my insurance company because I should be paying the higher prices because, you know, it's supplementing my deductible or whatever it is. And it's just this crazy notion of like, okay, why is this just so confusing? And so part of me was mad at first. And the other part is like, well, this is how they have to actually kind of move the shells around so everybody can still get paid. And it's like, oh, it's just horrible.
Yeah. Well, Bob, thanks for writing a book to help people navigate these situations a little bit better. And thank you so much for this enlightening conversation. We've been honored to learn from you today and appreciate your generosity and wish you and Michael the very best with your book release.
Great. Thank you so much. So there's just so you know, there's, as Jay has already pointed out, this can be applied to many things. We're doing one on finding your next company, finding your next job. So like, help me understand what would cause me to say today's a day. I leave one company to go to another. We're doing one on healthcare, and especially in the aspect of the preventative care, because I think there's a whole misnomer around, you know, people pay $3,000 for a new Peloton, but they won't go see the doctor.
Yep.
But they're thinking they've got healthcare. So how do we actually help people understand how to frame healthcare from a consumer perspective a little better? And then we're doing one on religion and why people hire religion and fire religion. And so it's try to basically understand those core elements to understand the progress you're trying to make. So those are that's what's kind of down the pike. The employment one is the next one for sure.
That's awesome.
That's so exciting.
At some point, Bob, you will be able to help people make all of the key major decisions in their life and make them much better. So we appreciate it.
Let me rephrase that. I don't think I'm going to help them. They're going to be able to help themselves.
There you go.
All I'm trying to do is make the implicit explicit so they can actually see all the variables that are at play when they're making these decisions. I just think that at some point, there's no way for us to do the homework we need without understanding our context and the outcome we want.
Yeah. That's a perfect way to summarize it, Bob. So thank you so much. And a quick parting message to our listeners. Please subscribe to and share our podcast. You can find us on LinkedIn, Medium, or on Twitter at SherpaPod. Let us know what you thought about this episode and give us a rating and a review. And then you can also follow HealthPodNet. That's the Twitter handle. And you can check out the other exceptional podcasts from the Health Podcast Network, of which we're a member. This is Ben Tingey. Thanks so much for listening to this conversation with Bob Mesta.
If you listen to Ben's story, right? Ben wanted to step it up. And if he was actually understanding that's what he wanted to do, he could have actually went and got help to actually figure out, here's some more alternatives. He just randomly happened to jump into Byron. Byron actually figured out. And again, most people think it's like, it just happened randomly. But the reality is like, you're at that moment where I got to do something and I don't know what it is. And what I say is the Byron effect is where people come in and show you something you hadn't seen before. They're like, I'm going to go do that.
Yeah,
but the reality is we have to be more purposeful in how we're actually choosing our careers than just happily running into Byrons.